Well, good morning, everyone. I don't know about you, but I find a lot of allergy stuff in the air. I've been sneezing, and I'll probably be doing some throat clearing, so please bear with me. We wanted to begin this morning by talking about the hindrances and the issue of how to bring wisdom and compassion to working with them. So, when we sat last night, or in your sitting in general, you're probably well familiar with the fact that although we start off with these lovely intentions to hold our concentration on the breath, or if we're doing more advanced practices, you know, to allow all things to arise, but be ever present and ever situated right in the event as it arises and not get caught in anything, the reality of our experience is that many times during the sitting, we will in fact get caught in secondary mental activity and get drawn completely away from our practice. And it may last a fraction of a second, or it may last several minutes. And when we awaken to that fact, we may gently return ourselves to our breath, or we may, in fact, beat up on ourselves for having been bad bhikkhus, things of that sort. So that tendency to get caught and the qualities that catch us are described by the Buddha as hindrances. And there are five major categories of them. They begin with getting the tendency to get caught in pleasurable thoughts, typically of sense desires, but in general, pleasurable things that draw us. And we can, if we pay attention to the sense of balance, we can feel ourselves drawn off balance and leaning into them because they're pleasant and we like them. On the other side of that same continuum are thoughts that are of an aversive nature, or they're described as ill will. So we'll have unpleasant thoughts arise. And there, if we're paying attention to that sense of balance, we can feel ourselves pushed back or leaning into opposition. So instead of craving, we're pushing to push these things away, or we're seeking to back away from them. So two of the hindrances have to do with that continuum of pleasant and unpleasant, and are in the realm of the senses. Two others are in the realm of arousal. One of them has to do with low energy states that create kind of a fog or a drag on our ability to process and pay attention. Those are described as sloth and torpor. And I like to characterize them. There's a sort of a joke about a teacher who's trying to motivate a group of teenagers. And he picks one of the teenagers in the group who's very bright but very disengaged, and says, Bill or whatever his name is, tell me what the difference is between ignorance and apathy. And his answer is, I don't know and I don't care. So he's giving the right answer. But, and that there's this quality in sloth and torpor of just this haze of disconnection and being in a fog which prevents you from getting connected. And then at the other end of that continuum, that arousal continuum, we have restlessness and remorse. And in its most general quality, it's a pure energetic situation where the mind is just bouncing. We describe it as monkey mind. And it may be so active that we can't even grasp the content. We just have the sense of almost a Brownian motion or fireworks going off, things going off so quickly that you can't even grasp what they are. But many times they have content associated with them, and that content will have to do typically with either past or future. So we can get into states of remorse where what's the content that's coming to mind is past actions in the past, past actions that we feel unsettled about, perhaps something unwholesome we've done, you know, some amends we have not made, some people we've hurt, and some actions which we find unsettling to reflect upon. I talked last night about when our virtue fails, when we get into patterns of lying or deception or harming people, we get into patterns of agitation about that. Yeah, either, you know, guilt or remorse about it, or if we want to keep it covered up, activity about that. So that would be remorse has to do with unwholesome or incomplete acts in the past, and sometimes we project into the future and generate worry, and that too can result from unwholesome conduct. We may be preoccupied with avoiding consequences of our actions, but it can also be based on more general concerns such as fear. We can also put into those that category of agitation the affect of grief, where rather than dealing with concerns, incompletions because of our actions, grief would be suffering arising from a sense of loss. But in all cases, it involves a sense of connection with things that aren't really here, because the past is gone and the future hasn't arisen. So what we're doing is we're conjuring mental images to which we are attached and identified. So that's four of the five hindrances, the two that have to do with the continuum of sensory, of pleasant and unpleasant attachments, attachments to pleasant, what's pleasant and unpleasant, and the other two have to do with energetics, and also sometimes attachments to content. And the fifth of them is perhaps the most pernicious when it comes to undermining our practice, and that's the hindrance of doubt. And I say it's the most pernicious because the other four have the quality of distracting us and pulling us away from our practice. But doubt has the quality of undermining our belief in the practice, or our belief in ourselves as being worthy of the practice. And doubt often comes, it begins with, it poses as wisdom. So it can begin with something as simple as reflecting on how our practice is going, and perhaps it's, you know, perhaps we've had some agitation and the other hindrances have been present, and we may have an observation arise that says this is very hard. It may, you know, we may have that same kind of thing when we try to take our practice off the cushion. When I was teaching the committed practice class that just ended, people were talking about how once you become aware of right speech and start paying attention to whether people are being truthful and constructive and timely and wholesome in what they say, you see that they are not. And it can be kind of painful. Or you're trying to be an agent of right speech in your conduct, and you find that it's very hard to not exaggerate and distort the kind of things that we're describing. Even if we're not grossly lying, we may be distorting the way we describe things, or we may be blurting things out in inappropriate times. So we might have that observation, gee, this is very hard. And that's something we can describe as wisdom or discernment. But the next step we take with it can be into slide into undermining our faith in ourselves. This is very hard, and I'm no good at it. This is very hard, and these teachings are bringing me pain. You know, when I see how unwholesome the people around me are in their conduct, when I see how hard it is for me to be wholesome in my conduct, that's painful. And I don't like seeing that. So why would I want to do something that's bringing me pain? This practice is supposed to make me happy, but no, it's making me uncomfortable. So doubt tends to come to us pretending to be wise and guidant and offering us guidance, when in fact what it's doing is undercutting our belief in ourselves and our confidence in the teachings. So I was talking to the committed practice class about this, and I was thinking about the fact that we know all these things. You know, we know, because we've immersed ourselves at least a bit in these teachings, we know that craving and aversion are unwholesome. We know that agitation and grief and remorse are not wholesome emotions. And we know that, and we've probably heard information about how to bring ourselves back from that. But what often happens is that our wisdom just falls through. It's like I describe it as we feel like we're a colander, that there's all kinds of wisdom that is poured into us from time to time, but it flows right through and makes a big puddle on the floor. Then we have to clean up the puddle. So I started thinking about, why is it that we forget these things that we know and these things that we care about and we recognize the wisdom and beauty of? And there's some standard things. The Buddha talks about the mistake of finding things or observing things which are inherently impermanent, but taking them to be permanent. So when we have something pleasant comes to mind, we mistakenly think, well, I could grab hold of that, and I could hold it, and it would last, and that pleasure would be eternal. And we don't recognize that when we have things that we like, we get bored with them, or we lose them, or people take them away, or other things come along that are more attractive, and we abandon them. I mean, there's all kinds of things that happen with pleasure that makes it obvious that pleasures are impermanent. And the same thing with difficult emotions. Rage or anger or distress arise, and they pass. But when they're there, we think, oh, I have to deal with this. I have to get engaged, because unless I'm engaged with it, it'll last forever. So one of these things that seduces us away from our wisdom is failure to recognize things as impermanent, and instead mistaking them for permanent. And there's a bunch of other mistakes that have that same flavor. And one of them is taking something which is just a small part of our experience, and because it's very vivid, thinking that it's the totality. And you see this in children, where a parent says no to a child, and the child says, I never get what I want. I never get my way. Things are never fair. And it's true that there are times when the world says no to us, and there are times when things are not fair, but that is not the totality of our experience, and we forget that. Another thing that seduces us away is failing to distinguish between direct experience and our reactivity and mental proliferations. So something happens, there's some kind of stimulus event in our life, and that has a purity and a directness because it's actually arising from direct external contact. But we get carried away with mental proliferations about it and mistake those for being just as real and absolute. So something unpleasant happens, and in addition to thinking that even though it's a very small incident, we mistake it for a permanent huge incident, we'd mistake the part for the whole, and we mistake a sample or an instant for an eternity, we also mistake our thinking about it for the reality of what it is. So something something unpleasant happens, and we start talking to ourselves about how this is going to ruin our lives. And rather than staying present with the direct experience and watching it rise and pass away, we leave that experience entirely and get caught up in our thinking. We get caught up in our thinking about what a terrible thing this is, and then we get caught up in our thinking about how we possibly could fix it if we do this and that, and we're miles down the track. And the last of these tendencies that make us forget what we know in terms of wholesome wisdom is the tendency to identify with our experiences and thoughts and come up with the idea that this is who I am. So we do something unwholesome. And rather than simply saying, well, that was unfortunate, or I wish I hadn't have done that, and what can I learn from it, and how can I avoid doing it again in the future? Instead, the mind says, well, that's the real me. I can't be trusted. My intentions are, I'm a hypocrite because my good intentions don't hold all the time. And, we think that this negative aspect of ourselves is the real us because we're identified with it. We're taking something which is inherently impermanent and short-term and passing through, and we're saying, oh, that's what's real, and that's who I am. So the core teachings for overcoming all of these hindrances is to break out of these patterns of conditioning that seduce us away, to simply be aware that the hindrances are arising. There are all kinds of techniques for overriding the presence of a specific hindrance with other more wholesome experiences. But the core thing is mindfulness, is the ability to recognize the hindrance that's arising as a hindrance that's arising. Because the mind essentially holds only one object in awareness at a time. And if the object that we're holding is awareness that something is a hindrance, then we're not caught in the hindrance at that point in time. So, if you're in the train station and you see the train come through and you watch the train stop and then you watch the train leave, that's different from getting on the train. And the mindfulness is the equivalent of staying in the station and being aware of what's going on and avoiding the tendency to get drawn into the thoughts or the feelings, or in my metaphor, getting on the train and being taken away from the station, which is our life in the present. So one of the things I have for you today is a little brief handout that I'll put out. It's sort of in the same way that you can take away the list of the precepts. This is simply a little list that takes some of these things, these ideas of how we get seduced away from what we know, and puts them into questions that we ask in the first person. So as these thoughts arise in your mind, or as you go through your daily routine and difficult things arise, you can ask yourself, am I mistaking a part for a whole? Am I mistaking an instant for an eternity? Am I failing to distinguish between direct experience and my reactivity and mental proliferations around that experience? Am I mistaking things that arise and pass away as permanent? And am I identifying with experiences or thoughts and thinking that these are who I am? So, you may find that helpful. I hope you do. Now, the last thing to say, this would be input for you on how to work with the hindrances coming from the direction of wisdom. And we also, in this retreat, want to talk about compassion. So the compassion side of working with the hindrances is to come to a quality of acceptance in a loving way with the fact that we have limitations, that the mind operates in a way that's not within our control. So we will, in fact, have thoughts and emotions and things pop into our mind that we cannot stop. And these are simply the realities of what it means to be human and living this life on this planet. We can come to acceptance with that in a way that's reluctant, or we can come into a quality of acceptance with it that's wholehearted and is enjoying the experience. If these things are beyond our control, then it's not our fault. We're not at blame. We are not the agent that makes, you know, that puts these seeds that we view to be unwholesome into the garden of our mind, so to speak. We can control what seeds we water. And attacking ourselves and criticizing ourselves is not the way to do that. So to have some compassion for our situation and have some compassion for the situation of the people around us, we will see countless examples of unwholesome conduct in others and arising in ourselves. And there is something about recognizing our limitations and doing our best and realizing that the best thing to do with a fire is simply not put more fuel on it. The best thing to do with the seed of a weed is to not water it. And to criticize and attack and condemn, these are all acts of throwing fuel on fire. These are all watering seeds of unwholesomeness. So we can instead find some compassion in our heart for the difficulty that all of us face. And just open to that and not get into struggles with it. Recognize that the difficulty, just as the joys in life, are inherently impermanent. And allow them to flow through us. Which takes us back to our meditation practice. And the instruction of allowing things to arise in awareness and observe them closely, stay with them, but not distort them with commentary, criticism, judgment, or thoughts about how they need to be fixed. So those are some thoughts about working with the hindrances, both from a perspective of wisdom and compassion. So let's put all this conceptual stuff aside for a little while and actually do some sitting.